my ideal is my ideal. This is Dr. Herbert O'Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with Absolute Philosopher. My ideal is my ideal. Now, what is my ideal? That's a good question, isn't it? We all have ideals, and we all have dreams, and we all have wishes, we all have wants, we all have ideals of the direction we'd like to go with our life. But do we have the ability to have our ideals be manifest in every area of our world? And when it's manifest, do we respect the fact that we put the cause in motion to have it be revealed? And this is perhaps one of the greatest challenges that we face in our life, being aware that we did it to ourselves. Now, there are many people who say, I am successful. I am so busy. I'm just such a millionaire. I'm such a wonderfully successful person. And then they complain about being so busy. And there are many people who say, well, I am just so happy that I moved in this town. I'm a dentist, and so many people want my services. And they want my services as a dentist because I'm the latest model dentist off of the school, and I've got the latest information and the latest techniques and so forth and the latest devices to work with to work on people's teeth. And people love it. They love the laser techniques that I use, and they love all these wonderful things that I take photographs of people's teeth, no longer using the x-ray. And it works out very well. It's a new system that has been just recently on the market, and I have it. And it not only is good, it is 100 times better than any other, because it shows all the way around the tooth, through the tooth, what the teeth are doing. It shows behind the teeth, in front of the teeth, and everything. And it's just such a marvelous technique that I don't need photographs. I can have them if I want, but I don't need it. I just look, and I have my goggles on while the laser is working there and reading what's going on in front and back of the teeth, because, see, there's not a lot of problems with the teeth. It's just here and there, there's a cavity, here and there, there's something that needs attention. But this shows it all to me, and it's not invasive, and it doesn't leave x-ray devices that I have to protect myself from or the patient from, and it is just such a wonderful gadget to use. But now, the same gadget also does the drilling. The same gadget also does the healing. The same gadget also cleans up everything, burns up the dross, burns up the rot, burns up the stuff, and then it cauterizes it. So the flesh itself, the jawbone itself, jaw flesh, will grow right back into where the tooth has been cleaned up. And it does it in such a way that it does it so quickly that it binds it, that no impurities or no, what would you say, anything can get into that area that has just been operated on and cleaned up and made perfect. You say, oh, wow, that sounds like the greatest thing in earth in dentistry. Well, it is. It's expensive. And yet, I have an office full of people coming to me wanting to have this treatment done. And I can do 8 times as many patients in a day as any other doctor. And I do them more explicitly. They come in for one treatment and they're done. They don't have to come back for repeats, and they don't have to come back to see if anything needs doing in a year's time, because we just do a check, and at the same moment we do the check, we do the repair. And you say, well, wow, that is really great. Does that really exist? Sure. And it's being used, but it is not too popular because it's quite expensive. It's not expensive for the patient. It's expensive for the doctor to buy the equipment. And, of course, the doctor can't get his money back from one patient. Mm-hmm. He's got to spread it out to be competitive with the others. But he can do such a much more complete and marvelous job than any other technique that's available. Now, what do you think of that doctor? Do you think he's pretty smart? Well, he's sort of going contrary to the program of other dentists, and other dentists find it very, they talk him down because they don't want to talk it up for themselves. And so therefore, they help to give him a bad name. Now, in the field of optometry, they have a similar situation going on. They have ophthalmologists who are going into the construction of the eye and the construction of the muscles of the eye, and that when the eye has some malfunction, they should go in and make a change in the muscle structure. They should make a change in this or that or the other thing. And the doctor who is talking that I'm referring to, he doesn't say that. He says his experience has shown him that where three doctors make operation, three other doctors work with exercises, you know, and five other doctors that he's recommended work with just the mind, just the thought, just the idea that be relaxed, be peaceful, and teaches people how to be peaceful, how to be relaxed, and how to live a happy and long life. Now, we have all these techniques that are going, and we have all these goals that people have. We have all these ideals that people have for their life. Now, what is your ideal for your life? What is your ideal for your goal in your world? Is your ideal that you're going to do what you're going to do and you're going to get paid for it? Or is your ideal you're going to do what you're going to do and you're going to have sufficient money in your life to take care of all of your needs and allow you the freedom to do what you want to do at any time you want to do it? Now, that to me seems like a very beneficial thing. And that seems to me like the possibility that people might give away their talents for free. And I say, isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? Give away the talents for free. What happens when doctors go to third world countries? The third world countries can't afford to pay them. They pay it themselves. The WHO organization doesn't have enough money to bring them in. And so they offer their services at no charge, and they go down to these third world countries and work with the patients who can use their services, and they're not paid. Now, are they doing an evil thing? They certainly are. They're doing a very evil thing. They're working for nothing. They're working for nothing. Now, how do the doctors feel after they're done working on their third world stint? They feel on top of the world, don't they? They feel just wonderful. They feel, golly, you know, I've really done a significant thing. Well, why couldn't we have our medical profession be independently wealthy, which they can, and work with people with no charge and do the thing perfectly? Now, why can't we do that? Well, we can. But the thing is, our modus operandi that we have used to operate our lives on has been so long, you get nothing for nothing in this world. You got to pay something to get something in this world. There's no free lunches. And yet we go to the third world countries and give them free lunches all the time. And the people in the third world country, it's just an interesting thing. What do they think about us when we come down and give them something for nothing? They hate us. They hate us. They would rather do something, pay for it somehow, maybe not be able to pay the whole thing, but pay for it somehow to have their self-worth and dignity. Now, isn't that true? Everyone wants to have self-worth and dignity. Now, if our goal were to serve around the world and at the same time elicit self-worth and dignity from the people we deal with, how wonderful that would be. How wonderful that would be. Now, could these patients or their families come in and take care of the clinic? Could the patients or their families who are receiving this special service come in and help others? Could they help the doctors? See, the feeling of self-worth, the feeling of paying for what you're getting in life, makes what you're getting all the more beautiful. When people get something for nothing, they belittle, bemoan, they act as though they're not really getting anything. And because they act that way, the healing or the blessing is not there. It is lost to them. Now, are you ready to live your life as a generous, open person who has your heart just wide open to give to everyone who could use whatever you have to give? Do you think an operatic singer sings to be paid? What does an operatic singer need when she sings or he sings? They need the applause. They need the approval of the people saying, that was a beautiful rendition you did. They don't need to be paid. Now, they are paid, and that's part of our program that they're paid. But when they give a benefit, do they give any less of a performance in the benefit than they do on the stage? Perhaps they even give a greater performance, because they know that they're reaching out to a diverse group of people who are not all pure opera lovers, you know. Opera lovers. They're not all pure opera lovers. They're people who like classical and semi-classical and light classical, who like all these things. And so they cater to their interests, and they sing very beautifully to their interests. But you couldn't pay them for the energy, the effort, the caring that they give in their presentation of their charity concert. But it shouldn't really be called a charity concert. It's called that merely because it earns money for charity, where people go there. What it should be called is the master performance. It's a master performance. It's not just an ordinary operatic performance. It's a master performance. Can you give a master performance every day of your life in everything that you do? Can you give a master performance demonstrating your ideal at all times? Can you do that? And the answer is yes, you can, but you don't, because you're afraid to give something for nothing. You're afraid that if you give it away, that it won't be appreciated. Well, now, what are you giving it away to? You're giving it away to yourself. And are you appreciating it? Yes, you are. Will you ever give less of a performance because the audience is small or the audience is large?
That's a good one.
Is the minister in the church going to give a less compelling sermon because there's only two or three people there than he would if he had 100 or 1,000? And 1,000 is certainly an inspiration. 100 is certainly an inspiration. 2 or 3... should also be an inspiration, you know. It should also be equally that inspiration, because you're giving a message. You're not giving it to anybody. You're really giving it to yourself. And as you give this message, you give it so completely, so fully, so beautifully, that no matter who is there, they feel like they've had the highest and the greatest and the most wonderful there for that message. I think that's what I like to do in my life. Whenever I speak, whether it's to a small group or large, I give them all that I am. And I do not even think of the numbers. I just think, I am presenting this, and this is what I'm presenting, and this is what I'm doing. And that's why people who do attend my talks, they find them very satisfying. They find them very rewarding, because I give my best. and I will always give my best, and I know you always give your best, because that in itself is the finest reward. Know that I love you eternally.
Thank you.